Welcome to Discover Lafayette. I'm Jan Swift. Discover Lafayette is focused on the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana in the region we call Acadiana. This episode of Discover Lafayette is made possible by the generous support of Lafayette Convention and Visitors Commission. Please visit their website at lafayettetravel.com to find out more about current activities and events. As most of you know, Lafayette is known for its family-friendly music festivals. Festival International is the largest international music and arts festival celebrated each year in the U.S. right here in Lafayette, with over 300,000 people attending this event for 5 days each April in the last week. Showcasing our warm joie de vivre, visitors travel here from around the world to experience our inviting culture here in Acadiana. It's really impossible not to enjoy this multicultural musical group event, which represents over 20 countries and focuses on our Acadiana and Francophone connections. I'm really excited to welcome to the show today's guest, Scott Feehan, who is Executive Director of Festival International. Scott's a local guy. He graduated from Como High and then UL with a degree in information technology. He opened a drum shop on Johnson Street in 1998 that's still operating today, Scott's Drum Center, and he also operates a music school, Acadiana School of the Arts. Scott now serves as the executive director and began his service as a board member and then board president. He also served as volunteer interim director before being hired in May 2016 as permanent executive director. And I love this information about Scott. He actually started attending the festival in 1992 and met his Canadian wife at the Fay Dodo stage in 2001. They now have two children who are also growing up with festival. Scott, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
On Discover Lafayette. So I called Scott this week. We're here in the holidays, Christmas 2017. And thought this would be a great time for you to look ahead and tell us about Festival International 2018. And before we do that, I'd like you to please share your background. I know you're a musician, and you didn't just end up at Festival International. So if you can talk about your musical roots and your roots here in the community.
Yes, I did grow up playing drums. I was a drummer. And I think I had aspirations, and I thought I was a good musician for several years. And it was when I actually opened up the drum shop that I started seeing, you know, real musicians play. And you know, in my mind, I thought, you know, I went to school and I'm educated, and look, I can play all these rudiments. And I really, in my mind, I thought I was a good musician. And you know, slowly but surely, I realized and kind of learned that wasn't my place.
They were better.
Oh, they were a lot better. So I. You know, we opened up a music school, and I was able to surround myself with good musicians, and I was hoping at some point it would kind of soak in by osmosis. But so I think my role was always more in the organization and kind of the coordinator type of type of standpoint. And we did music camps, rock camps, camps for little kids, and you know, I had the drum shop for years. So that was always my more natural fit. You know, and I did play in groups, and I had fun with it. And
yeah, I read or I saw online you were just honored this year as one of the 20 under 40 honorees locally, which is a very big deal.
Thank you.
And you were an artist in a hip hop group, which is something very few people knew, or maybe a lot of people knew about you.
Yeah, people get a kick out of that. The ones that remember that group, it was a fun group, and we had a good time.
Yeah.
Did that for a few years.
And,
you know, it seemed like a former life now.
Yeah.
So one of these days, I'll get back to playing.
Well, good. So I guess as a 15-year-old artist, musical artist, you started going to festival and must have really enjoyed that. That was in its infancy. It had started a few years before. And you must have really enjoyed that yearly event, getting to see musicians from all over the world come here.
It changed my life. I mean, I remember looking at the pocket, and a friend of mine took me out there, and I remember looking at the pocket guide, and I had no clue who any of the groups were, where they were from, but I just remember every act we would watch. It was music I had never seen or experienced before.
Beautiful and really incredible.
Oh, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And yeah, so we went back the next year and the next and just year after year. And I remember in my mind for most of those years, I didn't know who put it on. I didn't know how it happened. To me, it was magic that fell from the sky in downtown Lafayette once a year. And we'd show up and we'd experience some of the most incredible music we'd ever experience. And we'd go away for a year, we'd come back and it was there.
Right.
So I really took it for granted. But
what a great time of year, though. It's in April every year. So it's, you know, beautiful weather. Mm-hmm. It's not hot. Typically it's sunny. You know, we hope it's sunny so that it's a success. But it's a big collaborative effort. And while you've mentioned that, Scott, we were talking before the filming began. It's just like Mardi Gras. People show up, it's free. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that a lot of people understand that this is a major production. It's like almost producing a movie to get all the moving parts together to make sure the artists, the lodging accommodations, I know they have to pay taxes on income. There's so many things involved that for those of us to just fall out of our car and walk downtown, I mean, we don't really get the gist of it. So let's kind of go forward, if you don't mind, and talk about your board work. How did you end up volunteering to serve on the board of Festival?
I had always, since I opened the drum shop, I had supported the festival by donating backline or helping any way we could. And in 2009, a good friend of mine was running the Lafayette stage area. And I offered, I said, you know, it's time, let me start volunteering, tell me what you need. So I volunteered, I think, one shift that year. And the following year, when he was planning, I sat with him and I said, you know, Chris, I'm ready to pay my dues. Whatever you need me to do, just let me know. And he kind of looked at me and said, really? I said, yeah, And so he asked me to run one of the booths over there. So, and I remember telling him, I said, look, that's fine. I'll do it. Anything you need. If possible, I'd rather not give up my Friday or Saturday nights.
So you can enjoy the festival. Yeah.
And he said, yeah, that's fine. But he knew, and I knew what I was getting into.
You got reeled in.
I got reeled in. Uh-huh. So I ran that area the first year, then the next year I was nominated for the board, and I knew a lot of the board members because of our involvement. Mm-hmm. Once I got on the board, it just seemed like it was one step after another, and I got deeper and deeper, and you know, I got on the personnel committee, dealing with the staff and HR, and then I was the VP of production, and you know, overseeing. Well, with Diane, it's tough to take a lot of credit when Diane is involved. She really handles.
Who's Diane?
Diane's our director of production.
What's her last name?
Harris.
Okay.
She's been with the festival for 15, 16 years.
So she's committed.
She is committed, and she organizes all of the logistics from the setting up of every single tent to the sound, stage, lighting, water, electricity. You know, we have to set up an entire grid downtown just for electric.
To support the
just for
the
electric.
Power.
Yeah, I want to say we have somewhere between $50,000, $60,000 of electrical equipment with poles and cables and. So she organized, so I got involved with production, and then you know, my last year on the board, I ran for president, and I think 3 weeks after I took over as president, our director resigned, and
there you were.
Yeah, I got sucked in again.
Uh-huh.
But it's a labor of love. I think it's tough not to love festival, and
you're right.
It's like the more you get involved, the more you want to do. So
yeah, it's funny when you, I live near downtown, I'm not right there, but by UL, and it's almost a world away. You can have this huge event going on and then not even realize it. You know, for people that live here, I hate to say it, I think it's easy to take these kind of things for granted because it's been going on for decades, and we go and you're transported to another place. I mean, downtown is so much fun, but to see the transformation that you bring about with Festival is phenomenal. The artists from around the world, I mean, the craftspeople, the people selling things from their native countries that we would never see, much less the music that just is dynamite. It's another world.
It is.
And all free to people that choose to attend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was part of the original mission. You know, the mm-hmm. it was started in 87. So in 86, the founders got together, and that's when the oil crunch of the 80s happened. Mm-hmm. So part of the reason they wanted to form this festival is to help stimulate the economy and give people something to be proud of mm-hmm. to have in Lafayette, something they had never seen before. So they did want it to be non-ticketed. They wanted it to be accessible to everybody, even if you had lost your job. Mm-hmm. So we really try to stay true to that today. And
it's, you know, hard.
It's tough.
Yeah.
I mean,
talk about that, because I was saying, you know, I'm used to going to Jazz Fest. We pay for parking. We pay mm-hmm. to get in, and it's kind of expected. But here, you've been over backwards to keep it at no charge. So let's talk about what it costs to put on festival.
So our total budget varies, and it varies for some of the on-site expense, like beverages and things like this that are affected by the festival itself. Mm-hmm. But it'll vary between $1.2-1.5 million. So
that covers the artist, their travel.
Yeah, we spent, so next year we, well, let's talk about last year. Last year we spent about $250,000 on musicians, mm-hmm. street animation. I mean, that includes getting them here, paying them to play, putting them up in hotels. Mm-hmm. We have to transport them from a hotel to the, and that's a whole nother world that I hadn't seen until mm-hmm. even 3 years ago, just the musicians' village.
Yeah. Where do they stay?
At the Ramada on the thruway. So
you put them on the bus to get downtown?
No, we have vans. You know,
right.
We have a whole team.
It takes a lot of people.
We have a whole crew of people that are mm-hmm. dedicated just to transportation.
Yeah.
So $250,000 for that, and then production. We spend almost $400,000 on sound and stage, lights, tents.
Rent everything, or is this something that
we own
come to?
Some? You know, we with the grid, we set up. Mm-hmm. We have our own electrical equipment. We have some of our tents. We have some of our pin booths. A lot of the white tents that you see, you know, those are rented year to year. Mm-hmm. There's a lot that goes into it, and we have our staff. We have four full-time staffers and
that's
two
not very
part-time.
Many. Right.
So we depend also on, you know, not only the money that we have to raise, and so a third of our money comes from fundraising efforts throughout the year. So that's individual donations from $10 up to $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's small businesses from $3,000 to $5,000, and then the corporate. Which yeah. you know goes it's
generous.
A wide range,
uh-huh.
So that's about a third of what we have to raise, and then another third comes from kind of on-site
sales,
whether mm-hmm. it's beverages or merchandise or anything else we can sell on-site, and then the other third, you know, you're talking $300,000 or $400,000, we just have to get creative.
Uh-huh.
It's special events, it's some grants, it's, you know, it's, we just have to, we work all year long to try to figure out how to mm-hmm. raise that money, and then you get through festival and hopefully you have a good one.
Yeah, with no rain.
Yeah.
Right.
And then you just start over.
Uh-huh.
You have to raise
like
the money all over
Rosa.
Again.
So do you get funding from local or state government?
Yeah, we do. So we get some in cash. So from the city, we get $52,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on top of that, there's a ton that they invest in with police and security.
Right, protection, yeah. And then the streets, keeping things clean. I'm
yeah.
sure the public safety gets involved.
And then electricity uh-huh. and manpower to help us set up the electrical grid.
Mm-hmm.
So we do get a lot of support from the city in that regard. We get a little bit from the state in the form of
the
various
tourism.
Grants,
uh-huh.
right.
But you can't count on that every year. Is that mm-hmm. something you have to ask for every year?
Yeah, it's a lot of paperwork. And,
yeah.
You know, I know you've written grants before. I mean, it's
and
not only is it paperwork, but you also have responsibilities. You know?
You have to account
yeah,
that you spend it like the way that you said you would.
So if we have 15 different grants and each one mm-hmm. has different logos, have to go here, and you know, it's a lot to manage. It's,
right.
You know.
So you raise about $1.2 to $1.5 million to make this go on. What is the impact to our economy? Do you have some guidance you can give me on that? Like, what do people spend? And we must generate a lot of tax revenue from sales.
Mm-hmm.
All the merchandise, people staying in hotels that visit, all that.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's a great question, and it's such a thick answer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the last thorough economic study that was done in 2008. it was the B.I. Moody School of Business that did it. And they tried to come up with, you know, what is the impact, including spend at restaurants and hotels and stores and convenience stores.
Gasoline and just all the things people buy.
Everything that comes with people coming here. Mm-hmm. So with when they finished, they attributed an economic impact of $49 million to the local economy.
That's incredible. That's a lot of spending, and that's almost 10 years old now.
Right. And I'm an eternal skeptic, and I'm an analytics guy in my other life, so even if we cut that number in half,
it's a lot.
It's a ton.
Yeah.
So I'm a small business guy, so that's what really drew me to Festival, and I realized the economic impact. So we started looking at numbers internally, and we tracked, like in our merchandise booth, for example, we've tracked people from as many as 48 different states purchasing stuff in our merchandise booth. And half of the money that we made in that booth came from outside of the city.
Oh.
And a third of it came from outside of the state. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, it's tough to correlate all this stuff, but
just me and you buying things.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's money we would not see otherwise.
Right.
And if you can extrapolate that at all to that 49 million or the 20 million or whatever it is, you know, if 10 million of that's coming from outside of the city,
right?
That's
a lot.
It's a real impact.
And I'm bringing it even farther. If they're here in Lafayette spending money, and let's say they're driving from around the country, or even traveling here from other states or in other country, they're probably not just coming to Lafayette.
Right.
If I was coming here, I'd want to see New Orleans, and I may want to go to the state capital. So Lafayette is impacting our whole region.
Right.
All while people are having fun.
And that was part of the design when the organizers moved it to the weekend that we do it. It's the first weekend of Jazz Fest. So the thought behind it was exactly that. People can come down, they can come to Festival International, then they have a week to kind of travel and see
the state,
and then go see Jazz Fest on the following week.
Which is also a don't miss. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got a lot of good things going on here that time of year.
And you know, another part of this that can't even be measured in any sort of economic impact study, but when we organize for groups to come in, we're not just putting music on a stage, we're coordinating with, you know, last year, for example, we work with LIDA, we work with Le Centre International, the International Trade Center. In fact, Philippe Gustin is one of Festival's founders.
He was back right at the table at the beginning, meeting.
So last year, one great example was if you remember, we had the Chinese drum and dance group. Well, there's a new direct flight from China to Houston now. So Chinese tourists are starting to travel to Houston, and they're taking I-10 going all the way
here
to Florida.
Yeah.
So we were working with LCVC and Le Centre International to try to figure out how to put Lafayette on the map to bring some of these tourists here. So we got that group, and we had some support from some of the Chinese business people. And so those are the types of discussions that most people never hear about,
or know about. I hadn't heard that.
Right. So when we book groups, there are a lot of collaborations going on, and you know, with LIDA, you know, Greg Gautreaux invites business leaders to come here during festival. So it's the behind the closed door. So you have the celebration going on in the streets and in downtown, but behind closed doors, there's business deals and you know, there's a lot of things happening.
Right.
So we want to be strategic with what we do so that we are truly an asset to the city. If the Lafayette Consolidated Government has some initiatives or some goals that they want to do, you know, how can we work with them to, you know, there's only so much we can do, but we want to do everything we can.
But you can partner with some of the right people. So the original focus was the connection between Acadiana in the Francophone countries. Mm-hmm. Is that still the only focus? Are you saying that they're reaching out some to other countries, or was that just an isolated incident about China?
No, that was it was actually right before I took over as president, was it 2 or 3 years ago, is when I met Philippe Gustin.
Mm-hmm.
And we sat in this room, and if you've ever met Philippe, to me, he's one of those guys, he's just incredibly intelligent. When he starts speaking, I just want to listen.
Yeah.
He made a point that stuck with me. He said, you know, when we started this festival 30 years ago, all we really had to latch on to was our Francophone heritage and culture and roots. Mm-hmm. So we reached out to our sister cities, and that's how we got things off the ground. fast forward to today, Lafayette's a much more diverse mm-hmm. town. He said it's time to reach out to these other communities. So the other, you know, we have a big Chinese community in Lafayette. Right. Have a big Laotian, Indian community. So we reached out to the Indian community last year. We had some Indian artists come in. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're trying to do now. We still obviously pay homage to our Francophone heritage and mm-hmm. roots, but there is room, you know, if we can get other communities involved,
right.
you know, I think it makes it that much more
right.
special.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And Philippe is, for people that haven't met him, I mean, he's given so much to our community. He's quite a guy.
Yeah, and he's very humble.
He is humble, you know. But he's a doer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He actually, I heard a story, not from him, because he would never admit this, but when he was, this is in one of the early days, and I mentioned this earlier, there are three times in festival's history that I know of that it almost went belly up. And one, and this, they didn't necessarily almost go belly up, but when one of these years, it was in the early years, the executive director resigned. It was either in February or March.
Right before the festival.
Right before the festival. And the president came in, it was Joe Reel. And he realized that almost nothing had been done. There were no bands that were booked. There was a ton of work that had to be done.
Well, you could play the drums.
Right, right.
Save the day. Huh?
So he went to the board and said, hey, we need some help. Mm-hmm. And Philippe showed up. He was one of the people that really did a lot of the legwork.
And he's so connected.
Oh, yeah.
He can pick up the phone probably and reach people that it would take a while for the rest of us to get.
Yeah, so he's done a lot for festival throughout the years.
Yeah. And I do want to say that again. We mentioned it, but this is a free event that is really run with just a few paid staff mm-hmm. and a plethora of volunteers and generosity from our community. So right. while we have time, I really want to ask you about the Angel Fund. I know that there's a fund that was created in the event that rain might dampen the spirits of the festival.
Right.
Can you talk about that quickly, about, you know, how people can give and what that's about? We have about 3 minutes left, so.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I met with Mr. Herbie Schilling, we were in a very, very tough spot. We had about 6 months of cash in the bank. Fast forward through about a year of conversations, what we decided to do was start a dedicated fund, a community foundation. And this fund is dedicated to festival, mm-hmm. but it's not governed by festival. It can only be used for certain, you know, the responsible mm-hmm. things. So we're trying to pay off the building, and we're trying to have some solid assets instead of, because for 30 years we just operated with a checking account.
Right.
And that's it. So we're trying to provide some long-term stability. Mm-hmm. So the fund, I think as of right now, has about $170,000 in it. Now our goal is $1 million.
Right.
We have to come up with about $350 more to pay off the building. And
mm-hmm. But so you've got a vision. You've got a goal.
Yeah.
So.
So hopefully.
So anybody can contribute to that, I'm assuming.
Absolutely.
I Googled Festival International. What is the best way to find out more about what you're doing with Festival, Scott?
So our website has a lot of information on it. You know, we work hard to keep that up to date, and certainly mm-hmm. as Festival grows closer, we'll have more on there. But there's an info page on there.
Festivalinternational.org. Okay.
Yeah. And there's a support link on there, so if you want to contribute, you know, that's
okay.
from $10 to $3,000, whatever it is. And we have sponsorship opportunities, so there's a lot of ways people can contribute.
And I know it's fun to volunteer, so for anybody that would like to work at a booth, help sell t-shirts, whatever, they can contact you, Scott Feehan, at festivalinternational.org. Is that that's the best way, you're saying?
Well, and we normally open that up in February or so, and we'll have that on the website.
You okay.
can click on there, sign up, and
good.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I want to wish you the best. I know that it'll be, is it April 25th through 29th? 2018, downtown Lafayette. I want to thank you, Scott Feehan, for all you do for
thank
our
you.
Community. Thank you for making time today with Discover Lafayette. And I'd like to thank you for joining. This show, again, as I said, has been made possible through the generosity of Lafayette Convention and Visitors Commission. That more can be found out about them at LafayetteTravel.com. And this interview and all of our interviews for Discover Lafayette can be seen on our website, discoverlafayette.net. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or anywhere that you get your podcast. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Jan Swift with another episode of Discover Lafayette.